end, it's apparently less natural than at the other. It all is natural. But what is less natural isn't necessarily, for that reason, boring, lacking in form, lacking in excitement. Because beyond the radiolaria, the diatom, is the works of art of mankind, and beyond them, the work of the computer. All in the direction, the dimension of the artificial. But you never reach the purely artificial. You never, never get outside the domain of nature. So, from one point of view then, everything that exists in the whole world is in the course of nature. It is the Tao, it is the flow of being. And you can manifest the Tao and be in accord with it and be harmonious with the whole universe by doing any single thing you like. If you're a painter, you can go back home and you can take a bottle of ink and throw it at the wall and smash. And there it is. You can't stop it. If you're a writer, you can take somebody else's essay, cut it up the center, cut it across, and paste it in different ways, and then read it straight over. They're doing this now. And that's all right, too. See, that's it. You can roll down the street. You can totter about and dress upside down, put your pants on your top and your coat on the bottom. Anything goes, you see, in that domain. It's all right, don't worry. See? But nobody will understand you. You won't make a communication if you do that. You see, that's what some of our artists are doing today. They've discovered that they're completely liberated, or can be completely liberated. So they just do anything at all and have the nerve to sell it. But now look here, supposing that we're going to make a communication. I want to find a way in which I can make some things look more natural than others. How am I going to do that? I'm going to want to show you by some stratagem, whether it's by talk or by art, how you can have more suchness somewhere than elsewhere. That doesn't seem possible, does it? There is a saying in Zen you can write in a funny way. You can say this character, you know, means mountain. And this character means gets, attains to, grasps. The mountain gets the mountain. And the water gets the water. See? Now, mountain water, the two characters together mean landscape. So this refers to the earth as a whole. Now, when does a mountain get the mountain and the water gets the water? The answer is that the mountain gets the mountain when a particular mountain looks just like a mountain. And when the water looks just like water. And we can say of this, say of a person, this man is so much of a man, this woman is so much of a woman. So the man gets the man, the woman gets the woman. And, well, you know, you can do that too, you see. The man gets the man. And the woman. That's the woman. So, how are we going to do that, though? Every man is a man. Every woman is a woman. Every mountain, after all, is a mountain. But some mountains are more like mountains than others. As G.K. Chesterton once put it in a kind of satirical way, all religions are really the same religion, especially Buddhism. And he was trying to poke fun at people who say all religions are really the same. But what a wise word, you see, he had there. So now it comes to this question of how do we show something as being more of the nature of thusness, or especially of the nature of thusness? It's the same question as how do we show something as being more natural than something else? Now this lies, you see, this is the basic problem of aesthetics in the Far East. How a house can be constructed to look more like a work of nature than other houses. Because this is part of the real fun of going to a place like Kyoto, where for centuries they've been tremendously aware of this problem. Now you can go, on the one hand, to the Heian Shrine. The Heian Shrine is a huge Shinto shrine on the east side of Kyoto, which is built in Chinese Baroque style. And it is all orange, red paint and gold, with blue tiled roofs, with every kind of a curlicue and luxury and sort of, it's a real dolled up scene, with a magnificent garden. And in this garden, you know, there are lakes with carp in, and wonderful piers going out to summer houses on the end of the piers, with, again, magnificently curled roofs and everything as ornate as possible. And you feel, you walk into that place and you think, good Lord, I got into a willow pattern plate. Or this is a famille vert or something, you know. I mean, it's like you remember China from your grandmother's china cabinet. It's just that. And you think, well, you know, how unnatural can you get? How contorted, how twisted, how artificial? And then you go across to a place called Shisendo, up in the hills. And here is a little rustic house built by some great samurai who wanted to retire from all that political war scene, and build himself a place that would look as much as possible as if it hadn't actually happened on purpose. But now, how could he do that? He could have found a place which hadn't happened on purpose at all. He could have taken simply the hillside and sat down there and not done a thing, but somehow adapt himself to the changing temperature and become nature. But it's not the nature of a man to do that. He needs clothes because he didn't grow fur, and he needs a house, and he needs to eat, and so on. And so a man does it in a different way. But he did make a place to look as much as possible as if no one had really interfered with things. All of it is, from a certain point of view, artificial. Every bush, every rock, has been carefully considered. Its position minutely planned. Because The man enjoyed the problem of how natural can I make it. He really knocked himself out. Now, you see, look here. Here's the problem of how natural can I make it. I want to arrange in this area some rocks. See, this is a big expanse of sand. And I want to put them so that they don't look as if they had arrived there artificially. And what am I going to do? Obviously, if I do this, I've got a rock here, and a rock here, and a rock there. Well, somebody will say, 1, 2, 3, huh? You know, it looks as if somebody laid them there. And what you wanted was a situation where it didn't look as if it had been laid out like that. So we begin again. So we put rock 1, rock 2, and rock 3. Now, are we going to accuse anybody of anything? Yes, maybe we are. We're going to say, now, wait a minute, you couldn't get away from it so far. You put these two together in alignment, close, and then you thought, well, then the other one should be further away from it. It should be somewhere like that, see? But then you would say, no, they're all pointing the same direction. Reverse this one and put it that way. See, it still looks a little artificial. It always looks artificial, so long as we can trace the thinking of the artist. But when we can't trace the thinking of the artist, look, we'll divide the thing in two. We're still using the same pieces. Well, they might have been thrown there. But that's not good enough. What we want is the point where we can trace his thinking to the point where it has only just vanished. We are just going to keep pace with it. And say this is not quite as if it had been thrown down there. Something a little better than if it had been thrown down there. And that is the most difficult thing in the world for an artist to achieve. I mean, there's a trick to that. In other words, they've slowly rotated, but at distances which don't suggest orderly, numbered arrangement. Some of you may immediately see that trick that I used. Some of you may not see it. But the point is that the artist gets to the situation with relation to his beholders, where he has a trick just beyond what they see and almost just beyond what he knows. Do you see? It just reaches a critical point. And so it is so close to chaos and yet so close to being order that it's the point where the one turns into the other. Because here again, you've got a continuum. You've got chaos way out here, and you've got order way over here. And you can approach this one, or approach this one, but at a certain moment, when you approach chaos, but it's still really order, then you get a garden like Ryoanji. And you go there and see the most fabulous arrangement of things so as to look natural, done with infinite care and patience. So what happens here? In a garden like Ryoanji, which is just rocks on sand, there are five rocks, not three. What you have is somebody revealing that everything is natural, basically, by doing something more natural than anything else. So you can imagine in terms of human character what this experiment would involve. We want a person who indicates to everybody else that really and truly everything goes, anything goes. But so that this person shall not be confused with being a complete mess, see? He has to have a very, very carefully natural character. Yet at the same time, the mystery of this character and how it works must escape everybody who knows him, and it must even escape himself. Because he must be able to do it without really trying. So do you see from this that there are many, many things involved in a truly naturalistic art form, or in something which reveals the nature of suchness more than something else, when indeed everything reveals it? Everything is natural, everything is divine, but then there might be someone or something that approximates so well to the divine that you actually see it. The secret in all this is, first of all, that there isn't a method. Or to put it in another way, that you have to come to the point of losing everything, of letting go completely. As an Arab in a sandstorm, when the storm is absolutely impossible and overwhelming, he kneels down on the sand, he puts his burnous completely over his head, and he curls up like a fetus and waits. And because sand can often, light sand blown by the wind can be quite porous, even if he gets covered, he can breathe. But he doesn't try, he doesn't use any energy to fight the storm. So in a raging sea, you have to turn off the engines. Otherwise, every time the propellers are thrown out of the water, it'll shake the ship to bits and drift. The person who wants to master this must first get the feeling of being able to drift, of seeing that suchness, in other words, that nature is in all directions, and that you have really no alternative. Nothing you can do can hold it up, stop death, change, anything else. You have to, for a time, to go with it completely. Let go everything. And then as you do that, you see, just in the same way as the sailor finds that the wind blows him, if there is wind blowing and he's got any kind of a thing to be blown, he'll be blown by the wind. And after experimenting how it is for a while, just to be blown along by the wind, he discovers, good heavens, you can do little things that will change the course. So in exactly the same way, when you let yourselves go completely, let's say you imagine that you are completely determined. There's nothing you can do. You're just puppets on strings. And you accept the situation. You will then suddenly discover that you've got new life. And that you can start controlling it. And you can start playing with it in the masterly way that these men made gardens and did magnificent calligraphy.
Thanks for tuning into this program from Better Listen. Please visit betterlisten.com for more information about this program and the opportunity to share your comments and feedback with others.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.